Mini episode 731 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We're here for a very solemn occasion, but we're going to make the most of it. We're going to get some good stuff out there in terms of examining the life and times of one of the great legends of sports, Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, who passed away most recently at the age of 88. We are here today to talk about him, eulogize him, try to put his life and his career into proper perspective, which is very, very difficult to do because of the vast magnitude that it encompassed both in the world of hockey and the greater sports world, certainly in the country of Canada, and I think also throughout North America as well. There hasn't been as much, obviously, penetration of hockey in the United States as there has been in Canada over the decades, but I dare say he was easily a household word south of the border as well. So we're going to talk about his life and times. We have an excellent panel. As I said, a joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge. We have with us FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen here today. Russ, how you doing, my man?
Good, Rick. How are you?
Doing fine, thanks. Was looking forward to breaking this down with you and fellow longtime FDH Lounge dignitary Steve Callis joining us. You can, of course, catch Steve regularly on such outlets as WFAN in New York, SNY, multiple different places, including the STN.net, where he continues to host a regular webcast. Good to have you on, Counselor. Thank you for being part of our panel today.
Great to be with both of you guys. Looking forward to it.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about, and as I said, it's kind of hard to even know where to start in terms of putting this man's life into proper perspective because he accomplished so much on the ice. He had such a unique persona about him, too, a very tough guy. You hear a lot about the Gordie Howe hat trick with the fight, the assist, and the goal. But also an old-school gentleman and really sort of a bygone kind of a figure, maybe a little bit more soft-spoken outwardly than the John Wayne type might be, but I always kind of thought of him along the same lines as that in terms of the old-school idea of what a man's man really embodies. And, of course, there's a little special attachment for me because I am a longtime Detroit Red Wings fan, so I'll start with you on this, Russ. You particularly, not only from covering hockey, but also the collectibles and memorabilia industry, where he was obviously also a giant. You had been greatly exposed to this man's influence, this man's reach over the years. Where do you start in terms of putting him into proper perspective?
Well, I think he's like the Babe Ruth of the sport. I think he's probably second to Wayne Gretzky in the collectibles world, just because Wayne Gretzky sort of hit at the right time, and when Gordie was at his height, the collectibles world really was nowhere near what it is now. But I was at an event where he was getting his Parkhurst rookie relaunched, and it was an amazing event with him, his wife Colleen, and his dog Rocket, and that was it was a lot of fun. I got to spend like a couple of hours, listening to him. One day I'll have to replay it. I have the sound file somewhere, but listening to the early part of his career, him taking train rides, he was answering questions from the audience. At one point, Colleen took Rocket from him because while he was talking, he had his massive hands around Rocket's neck, and she was worried that he was going to suck the life out of the dog accidentally. And I was petting the dog and watching it, and it was fantastic. I mean, I'll tell you what I think the best unknown story or lesser known story is him playing baseball. In the summer of '51, he actually joined the Saskatoon 55s of the Saskatchewan Baseball League, and he was already playing, so this was like a second job, because back then you didn't make a ton of money. And he already had won the Art Ross, and he was third in the Hart Trophy voting. And he played, and he was good. He was a good hitter. And you can imagine with those hands, and he was 6 foot and a couple hundred pounds, he was a really good player, but the Red Wings eventually nixed it. And I don't blame him. They didn't want him to get hurt. But I just think it was cool that he could play another sport, even if it was like a semi-pro baseball situation. And it was just cool that he would do that. And he was a pretty great golfer, too, from what I heard.
Well, that makes sense. You know, you look at some of the greatest athletes over a period of time, whether it be Jackie Robinson, Jim Thorpe, Jim Brown, who's the greatest lacrosse player arguably ever, and nobody ever really talks much about that. All the great ones really seem to have abilities in other areas if they set their mind to it, so that doesn't surprise me very much. Now, what I'd like to ask you about, Steve, especially upon having heard that and having heard the baseball connection, because I was going to kind of go there anyways, because I know you cover a multitude of sports, but certainly baseball and hockey among them, is the notion of at the end of his career having that handoff, if you will, with the All-Star game, with skating with Wayne Gretzky, the opportunity to kind of rub noses with the future, if you will, in that way. I mean, that's something that seems to me it's almost unprecedented in any other sport, because I would agree with Russ on the Babe Ruth connection, but Babe Ruth is a further back historical figure than that. We don't really, I don't think, have any kind of precedent in any other sport for anything like that when you're looking at the two players that people would say maybe have been the greatest of all time who were not contemporaries but who just managed to brush up against each other for that brief moment in time.
Yeah, well, they were contemporaries, I guess, because Gordie Howe played until he's 52, but I think you're right. I'll throw Bobby Orr into the mix. We can do that some other time. But both Orr and Gretzky have said that Gordie Howe is the greatest hockey player of all time. But I agree with you. The greatness of Gordie Howe, you know, to me, it's hard to put it in perspective as a hockey player for this reason. And I was a little kid in the mid to late 60s when they went from six teams to 12 teams literally in 1 year. And if you ever want to see point inflation in scoring, just go look at anybody's stats before and after. So when you say Gordie Howe scored 801 goals and Wayne Gretzky, the all-time leader, scored 894 goals, you have to understand that Gordie Howe played literally 20 seasons before they went to expansion. And just to give you one brief example, Howe in the 4 years before expansion, and that would be the years 63-64 through 66-67, he never scored more than 29 goals, yet in the first 2 years of expansion, he scored 39 and 44 goals. He never scored 100 points. In fact, I'm sure Russell knows this, in 1952-53, he became the first NHL player to score 95 points. Back in those days, Rick, if you scored a point a game, you were unbelievable. If you scored 20 goals, you were an offensive weapon. If you scored 30, you were a star. Yet in 1968-69, at the age of 40, Gordie Howe scored 44 goals, 59 assists, 103 points, just staggering
crazy.
Staggering numbers. So I think when you take a step back and understand the era in which he played, and again, I'm old enough to remember just before, you know, I was a little kid, but just before expansion, where again, and nobody understood this, and when Gretzky came along in the 80s, taking nothing away from Gretzky, but, you know, the goal scoring, everybody's stats went up. Again, look at anybody's stats, any really good hockey player before expansion, before 67, 68, and after, and by definition, everybody's numbers went up tremendously because, again, they added six teams. They doubled the league. But the greatness of Howe as a player, in the early 50s, the Red Wings were dominant. They eventually, when the Canadiens in Toronto in the late 50s into the, you know, 60s, they became better. And frankly, Howe never won a cup, as you guys probably know, after 1955.
Right.
Taking nothing away from him, six MVPs, six scoring titles, four Stanley Cups, the numbers are what the numbers were. But I think we miss, I would say he is the greatest all-around hockey player because you have to factor in not just goals and assists, but defense, toughness. You know, I kind of like those great players who are tough, taking nothing away from Gretzky. And Orr was tough, certainly, when he came up. Again, I saw him as a little kid. But I think, from a big-picture perspective, we don't even understand how great he was, even though everybody knows how great he was. It's really interesting to me.
You know what? There's an interesting thing here, too, Rick. We see what's going on with Ichiro, where, you know, his combined hits, he's ahead of Pete Rose, and, you know, Pete Rose preemptively makes the strike and says, well, you know, I'm the hit king. And it's like, yeah, we get that you're the hit king of Major League Baseball, But you can't take away from this guy's accomplishments combined that the numbers, because he still played in a professional league, a pretty good professional league where guys can come over here and do really well. Not every guy, but some guys don't even want to come over anyhow, so it's hard to tell what percentage would be great. But the idea is you look at Gordie Howe, and they count his WHA numbers in the Hall of Fame, and rightly so, because, again, it was a professional league. Was it the NHL? No. But, again, he was still scoring against professionals, and it would be tough if you took those goals out. And so I agree with that, and certainly people like Wayne Gretzky never argued with that. And it's just kind of weird now in baseball where people are shunning Ichiro for that. And I don't know what your guys' opinions on that are.
Well, that's a separate show. I mean, I love Ichiro. I don't know that you can add the hits together. I will say this, though. They only played 130 or 135 games in Japan, and I don't want to get off base here, Rick. No pun intended, but 1,278 hits is not a lot of hits for seven full years and parts of two other years. So the notion that he wouldn't have gotten 1,278 if he had played seven or nine additional years in America is absurd given what he did. Having said that, I'll just stop right there because I'd love to talk about this some other time. But getting back to Howe just quickly, I just want to give you a sense in the world today where if you look at someone the wrong way, they're injured and they have a quad or a this or an oblique, things we never heard of. From 49-50 to 69-70, 21 seasons, Gordie Howe played in every game 16 times. He missed one game twice. He missed six games three times. So in the span of virtually those 21 seasons, he missed a grand total of 20 games. Again, it's unfathomable nowadays. So it's not just longevity, it's durability and greatness for the longevity, unlike I would call them compilers in baseball, these guys who hang around to get 3,000 hits or 300 wins and they did it over 25 seasons. He was unbelievable at the beginning, unbelievable in the middle, and even was unbelievable towards the end. It's really stunning when you take a step back compared to the players of today.
And he had that head injury, which a lot of people think that he had a metal plate, but he didn't have a metal plate in his head. That was you know, legend.
Right. But he did come back from that fractured skull, which in and of itself is unbelievable. And, again, only missed that handful of games over the years. And as far as Ichiro goes, I agree, generally speaking, with both of you guys, that it means something. It doesn't mean that he has surpassed Pete Rose, but Pete Rose typically, characteristically, cannot be even the slightest bit generous about it and admit that much. But, well, when we're talking about icons, that was kind of going to be my next question, and I'll start with you, Russ, that this is a year where I kind of just start hearkening back in my mind's eye, and sort of did starting early in the year to 2009. This seems like the real kind of hit parade year like that. You go back to I started the list with Lemmy until I remembered it was like the end of December. But Glenn Frey, Prince, David Bowie, Merle Haggard, Gary Shandling, Patty Duke, Morley Safer. I'm missing a couple of them here, but there's part of it in a way. I don't know that anybody's death could ever be said to be fitting, but, I mean, right on the heels of Muhammad Ali, right? These are guys that were contemporaries, household names, whatever. When you're thinking about some of the biggest of the big out there of the last 50-some years in the world of sports, these are guys that are on that very, very short list. So in this very morbid year that we're going through, slash a year that we're celebrating the lives of these people, however you want to look at this, there is something weirdly maybe fitting about him and Muhammad Ali being joined together one last time, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so, although they were completely different guys because, like, how –
Yes.
Like I didn't like Muhammad Ali the boxer. I liked the human being, and I was a big Joe Frazier fan, so there was a lot of stuff going on there. But how – nobody ever really talked about him being a bad trash talker, being a bad guy. Did he elbow you in the face? Yeah. Did he knock you out possibly? Yeah, but he just played hard. But afterwards, always seemed to treat everybody with respect, players and otherwise. So I think there was a difference there. But, you know, the one thing that sort of gets you is, and I get that Ali was bigger around the world, but he got 9 hours of coverage, like on ESPN, and Gordie Howe got a mention. And if nothing else, you could have brought up the Gordie Howe stem cell story because that really gave him like an extra year and a half of life. And we all thought he was going to pass a while ago. And I would constantly talk to Mark, and I would see Gordie in Philly, and we would just be amazed at how much better he was looking. He actually got to the point where he was going fishing again. Like, his family was just thrilled about that. And that's a pretty great story considering it's illegal in the States and he had to go to Mexico to get it.
Yeah, I think part of the problem,
I'm very envious of your knowledge of the Howe family again, Russ, because as I say, he is a man that was a hero of mine. And there was a great, I think it was a Lifetime movie a couple of years ago about him playing in the WHA in the 70s with his sons, which was really awesome. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I just think part of the problem, and it's unfortunately a problem that I don't think certainly in New York, where I am, is ever going to be corrected, but the hockey in the 20s and 30s and 40s, pre-NBA, all of these venues you hear about, the Boston Garden, Madison Square Garden, these were hockey arenas first. And for better or worse, because my father was a Ranger fan from the 20s, he was a guy who didn't really get into basketball because by the time the NBA came around, he was already in his 30s post-World War II. So when I was a little kid, we used to go to the old garden and we'd sneak down. He knew how to sneak down to get autographs. We actually used to go see a young Marv Albert, talk to him for 10 minutes, and then the guards would clear and we could go. And I can tell you firsthand, I don't have Russ Cohen stories, but certainly in the mid to late 60s, Gordie Howe was a rock star. And at the Garden, for the people who knew how to sneak down, he would never not sign an autograph. It was stunning. You hear these stories about guys all the time. I saw it firsthand. You'd have all the Red Wings come out of the visiting locker room, and Gordie Howe would come out, and there'd just be as many people who were still in the arena waiting for an autograph. And I must have got his autograph, no exaggeration, 30 times, and never saw him not give an autograph to a kid. So that part of the story is true. But my point being, the reason Muhammad Ali gets what he gets and Gordie Howe gets what he gets, at least in New York, as you know, Detroit is hockey town. I spent a lot of time up in the Massachusetts area the last 4 years. My daughter went to college up there, and I got to tell you, the hockey coverage on Sports Talk Radio and on NESN is much, much greater than it is in New York. And I think, frankly, there are just a number of people who don't know, don't care, don't like hockey, and it never quite took hold as it should have, with 94 being an exception, of course, when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup. I think it's sad, and certainly he deserved more than he got.
Well, the roots have always been strong up there, and you go back to the whole story of the miracle team of 1980 with that Minnesota versus Boston kind of rivalry that they had to kind of get rid of in order to get cohesiveness on that team. The roots have always been deep up there. It's a great region. They really cherish their heroes. Just to bring everything full circle, I'll start with you, Russ. Just if you were to try to sum up briefly Gordie Howe, what the man's life meant, whether it be sports, whether it be the effect that he had on people, whatever it might be, what would you think that his legacy would be?
Well, you know, there was a movie, and I own a copy, a John Wayne movie, where he played as a Detroit Red Wing. It was called Idol of the Crowds. And to me, like, Gordie Howe was the John Wayne of the NHL, but for real. Like, John Wayne couldn't skate. They did these cut scenes. It was funny. But he was really that guy. Like, that's how important he was. That's how big he was. He never went away. He came back so many times, and every time he came back, like, you would think at some point he may have even been worried about coming back because you may not live up to your own expectations of what you used to be. No, he just wanted to play with his sons, and he got to do that. And, look, in the WHA, they kind of skirted the rules. Mark was underage where he wouldn't be able to get drafted. In the NHL, all of a sudden WHA goes, yeah, he can get drafted, and they all played together. But it was terrific, right? And so all those things, all that story, it's just fantastic. And you really – they just don't make guys like this anymore. They really don't. When you would talk to him, he would literally be listening to you. He would sit down and talk to you if you were in the right situation. He always had time, and there's not a lot of guys like him anymore.
That's amazing. That's a great insight right there, because character and class are basically the things that I would kind of think to sum him up. And I can't believe I, as a Red Wings fan, never knew that about John Wayne making that Wings movie. And I made the John Wayne reference a couple minutes ago here. I literally never knew that, but how fitting that was. And certainly when they were casting that, they had to have him in mind, I would think. Steve, turn to you on this one here. What would you think here in terms of how you would try to sum up for somebody the life and times of Gordie Howe?
I would try to sum him up by saying he was the most complete player ever to play the game from the late 19th century until today. The most durable player ever. You know, I didn't even say at the age of 51 when he came back to play in the NHL. For Hartford, he played all 80 games. I mean, it's unfathomable. And on top of that, I would say Yes, mean and nasty on the ice, but a classy guy off the ice. Again, firsthand, I never saw him turn away an autograph and must have been there at least 30 times in my life. So a great ambassador for the sport and certainly earned the respect of the incredible greats who came after him, including Bobby Orr, who obviously played against him, and also, of course, the great Wayne Gretzky. So I think 88 is a great run. I think it should be a celebration. Fascinating story from Russ about how his life was extended and something to look into, because stem cell research is the future, I think, a whole separate issue, of course, Rick. But all in all, that's what I would say, the most complete player who ever lived and also one of the great ambassadors of the sport.
Absolutely. And again, when you talk about the durability and the longevity, you look at that again. You look at the average hockey player, and particularly the ones that are stars, and if they're willing to just hang on further and not really be what they were before, how long can they stick around in the league? And I don't say this to dismiss him, but Chris Chelios is one of those guys who comes to mind. He kind of got every bit of juice out of the rind, so to speak, doing that, willingly playing a lesser role like that. I mean, Gordie Howe, had he wanted to do that, how long could he have gone? Mid-50s, late-50s? I mean, it's amazing because he still had something left to give at the end there. He hadn't really even reached that point yet. So he actually did get out before that kind of severe drop-off came. Obviously, he wasn't what he used to be at 51, but an amazing, amazing story of a true legend, a man of class and character, and somebody that I wanted to have you guys with me here to recap today. Really, really appreciate it as always. Russ Cohen, Steve Callis, thank you guys so much for being a part of what I think is a very fitting tribute to Mr. Hockey.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
Great to be with both of you. All right.
Yep. Really appreciate it, guys. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.